This is the Build Your Online Audience podcast with Janet Murray, episode 445.
You're listening to the Build Your Online Audience podcast with Janet Murray. Tune in every week for practical advice that will help you build your online audience. And now, here's your host, Janet Murray.
Hello and welcome to the show. In this episode, I've got something a little bit different for you, but different in a very good way. So I am sharing with you one of the sessions from my annual content planning event, 2021 Sorted. It's with the author, Sasha Black, and it's all about how to publish your own nonfiction book. It is packed full of practical tips and strategies, right from idea to publication. She walks you through every single step in this session. And actually, she even talks about how to come up with a really great idea for a nonfiction book. Now, if you've picked out this episode to listen to, I'm pretty sure I don't need to tell you about the benefits of having a nonfiction book, but it really does help you to build your authority. It helps you to build your credibility. And of course, that is going to help you to build your audience. The more that people see you as an expert or an authority in your field, then the easier it's going to be for you to build that audience and to build that traction online. And particularly if you're interested in getting booked to speak, you're interested in being invited to be a guest speaker in maybe other people's membership programs or putting guest content into other people's online courses, for example, that authority piece is really, really important. And a nonfiction book can really help you to do that. Also gives you more authority and credibility with your clients as well. Little tip actually that an author gave me a few years back, a marketing speaker, Jeff Ram. And I remember him saying that when somebody got in touch with him to inquire about booking him for a speaking gig, he got his book and sent it straight out to them in the post. It's a great way of showing, not telling, what it is that you can do and what it is that you know. Really powerful stuff. So a little bit about Sasha before we get stuck into the content. So Sasha is an author of fiction and nonfiction. She's published a number of books for nonfiction authors. I think it's 8 at the last count, but it's certainly a lot. And she is also a fiction author as well, of fantasy books. She is just an amazing person. She invited me to be a guest on one of her podcasts. She has many. She's very productive. The Rebel Author podcast, which was great fun. We got on really, really well. And she's just got great character, great spirit, full of good advice, so generous. And I'm really excited to be able to share Sasha with you. If you were at the event, maybe you haven't had a chance to catch up on this session. And if so, definitely worth doing so. But there's so much stuff in this particular session that you could probably listen to it many times and still not get everything out of it. And before I take you over to the session, just a reminder about something which is pretty relevant, actually. It's my Courageous Content course. So this is a new mini course I've put together to help you to get more courageous, basically, with your content. It breaks down how to write 4 different styles of social media posts. So if you're someone that ever gets stuck on what kind of social media content to create, how to construct your post, it literally sets it out paragraph by paragraph, even gives you a word count for each paragraph. There's also a video template in there as well, a script that you can use to create videos really quickly. I ran this course live as a challenge at the beginning of 2021. It was really successful. And I have to say, it's probably one of my most proud moments being an online teacher, just seeing so many people come in and being really lacking courage in their content and not really knowing where to start and not really knowing what they should be posting to get engagement, to see people not only start posting regularly, get more consistent, see their numbers go up, their engagement, their comments, their likes, their shares, but also crucially to see people to start posting video content. People who told me at the start of the week that they were just so terrified they could never do it. Really, really amazing stuff. So if you want to get hold of my Courageous Content mini course, if you're listening to this episode around the time that it goes out, we have been doing an offer whereby if we have any left, you can grab a copy of my 2021 social media diary and planner. I can't guarantee that we'll have any left, sorry, when this goes out. But if there are, certainly check and it will be evident on the sales page as to whether we still have them or not. But certainly for the investment, which is £39, it will make a huge difference to your content. For me, content creation, a lot of it is about confidence. It is about courage. It's about just getting up the confidence just to get out there and put content. The only way to get good at content is to create content. And this course really guides you through it step by step, hold your hand. It gives you templates that you can use. You can obviously add your own voice, but gives you that structure that can sometimes hold you back when it comes to creating content. So enough about my courageous content course. Really excited to hand over to Sasha now. I think you're going to get so much value from this session.
Hello, everybody. My name is Sasha Black, and I am here to talk to you all about how to self-publish your book in 2021. So as Janet said, do let us know in the comments and I will have a look afterwards to see who is publishing their book in 2021. And also let me know the genre and the topic of your book as well. So without further ado, let's dive into this session. So what am I going to cover? Well, I am going to take you right from the concept of your book, thinking about the ideas, all the way through the writing, the formatting, the actually getting that physical book in your hands, all the way through to publication. I'm going to give you a whistle-stop tour. There's a lot to cover, so I'm going to crack straight on. What do you need to consider before you write? Well, I get a lot of questions all about how do I actually decide the topic? When you write fiction, it's a little bit easier because you're thinking of a story, you've got your characters. When you write nonfiction, particularly when you're trying to write around your business, you need to come up with a topic that is relevant for your business. So the first thing I like to do is think about the purpose of your book. Do you want to use your book as a business card? Would you like to draw readers in, draw potential customers to your business? If so, you may want to think about your book as a business card. If you already have a lot of expertise in a particular area, maybe you're a PT trainer, maybe you're a gardener or whatever, you've got an expertise in a particular area, then you can draw on all of that knowledge, all of your industrial experience, and use that as the foundation of your book. And likewise, maybe if you're doing more of a coaching business and you have personal experience, lessons you've learned through life, then maybe you want to write more of a memoir-y kind of narrative nonfiction style book. So once you have decided the purpose of your book, you then need to work out what exactly is the structure and the type of your nonfiction book going to look like. The main types of nonfiction book are how-to. So I spend a lot of my time writing how-to books. I write books on how to write better characters or better prose. You know, how do you bring up the quality of your writing? But it might be, again, that you want to write a book on how to grow your own garden or how to diet as a vegan eater. If you don't want to do that and you've got something more on the memoir side, then that is a short period in your life where you've learned a particular lesson. Narrative nonfiction then is kind of similar to memoir. It's usually about your own life, but it has more of a fictional story arc. So an example is the recent Amazon Kindle Storyteller winner, Anna McNuff. I read her book and it was amazing. And it was all about her journey of cycling 5,000 miles across South America. So she had the start of her journey. Could she do it? Is she going to make the 5,000 miles? All the arcing through the problems, the sickness, and then through to the finale, the end of the story arc, where she successfully managed to complete the 5,000 mile cycle. If you're more on the trend topical type book, then examples of that will include things like blockchain blew up a couple of years ago. There were stacks of books on blockchain. And this links into the next point, is deciding whether or not you want something that is evergreen and will last forever. So my craft books, for example, they don't need really updating because craft is craft, and it was craft last year and it will be craft next year too. But if you're writing about blockchain or technology, for example, then these are things that change rapidly. And so you need to decide whether or not you're going to just put out the one book and it will go out of date and then maybe it's not so relevant anymore, or whether or not you're going to factor in doing multiple editions. So that's all of the things you need to consider about your book before you start to write. Another thing you may want to think about more broadly in terms of the business model is your publishing model. So do you want to be self-published, indie? Spoiler alert, go indie. Or do you want to pursue traditional? Now, I say pursue because there are no guarantees in the traditional publishing world. It is extremely hard, particularly in this client, to get a traditional publishing deal. Also, I'm wildly biased. I'm an indie author. I think it's awesome. But let's look at some of the differences. So with traditional publishing, one of the benefits is there's no upfront cost. If anybody tries to charge you as a traditional publisher, it's a scam. Run a mile. You should not pay to publish your book, particularly with traditional publishing. What else? Okay, so like the rest of them are pretty much negatives, in my opinion. So you don't really have any control over the timeline. Timelines in traditional publishing are much, much longer than in indie publishing. You can look and expect at least 2 years before, from signing the deal before your book will be published. You've got no control over time, finances, or your intellectual property rights. It's a myth in traditional publishing that you get a lot of help. You do not get a lot of help with a traditional publishing deal, unless you are a lightning strike author and you get a whopper of a seven-figure deal or a six-figure deal. Then they are going to account for a marketing budget. For the average author, they don't get anything. You get very little marketing help. And the problem with that is because you're getting a lower royalty, it's a lot harder to make a return on your investment. So looking at the money then, typically with a traditional publishing deal, you'll get about 10%. So if you sell an ebook at $4.99, you're going to get 49p. Rich, you've made it. And of course, of that 49p, you're also going to have 15% of that go to your agent, unless you get a publishing only deal without the agent. There are options for that. So then let's look at indie, which is much better, if I haven't made that clear already. So as an indie author, you have total control over your timelines, over the finances, over your intellectual property rights. If you want to license merchandise or license gaming rights or whatever, you have the control and the power to do that. And the benefit is get paid for it. Again, you also have to do your own marketing. So some people will see that as a negative. I don't. I like control. I like to be able to affect my the sales and stuff. You also get freedom of choice over your covers and over the types and style of marketing that you're going to do. The royalties are also significantly higher. So rather than getting only 49p from that $4.99 ebook, you will get 70% of your royalty. So anything, depending on country and platform that you publish on, you could get anything from sort of £2.60 up to £3.20. So you can see that that gives you a much bigger budget to then market and, you know, spend in order to get that sale. Downsides, you do have all of the upfront costs. And of course, the responsibility is all yours to get the book published. And you do have to wear multiple hats. So you are author, you are publisher, you are marketer. But you know what? I kind of like that. We're all business people. We're entrepreneurs here. So I'm sure you're all going to love that too. All right. So let's look at the writing of the book. With nonfiction in particular, we have to focus on what is the problem that we are solving with our book. There should always be it might be that you're solving multiple problems in your book, but there should always be one overriding problem. And that is the story arc for your nonfiction. Lots of people don't realize that nonfiction still needs a story arc. Yes, it is different than fictional story arcs, but you do still need one. So yes, you need a problem. So as an example, my recent nonfiction book, The Anatomy of Prose, the problem in that book is how do you improve your writing and your prose as an author? And so the whole book is centered around showing writers and authors how to improve their writing. And so the story structure, the story arc in your nonfiction is usually the hardest part of writing. And that's because you have to do what teachers do. And so you have to present the problem, the context of the problem, how most people get to this point where they have this problem. And then you have to very slowly layer on solutions. So rather than dumping the conclusion or the answer to their problem in the early chapters, you have to slowly layer those solutions and those answers one by one on top of each other in increasing difficulty. Another thing that's really important with nonfiction, if you are doing an instructional type of nonfiction book, then use lots of examples. And that goes for things like technology as well. Some of these things can be quite complicated. So it's really important that you give a lot of examples, less so in memoir because your life is the example. But yeah, hopefully you get the point. Oh, yes. And the last thing is really important that you make it personal. Lots of authors are very afraid of putting themselves into their books. But actually, this is what humanizes you as the author to the reader. So an example, I was talking about alliteration in one of the chapters in my nonfiction book. And my son, who is six, loves to play alliteration games. So he'll spot, you know, like Sally's, oh God, well now I can't even remember what I was going to say, like Colin's car, for example. Or he'll go into the supermarket and he'll spot tins that have, you know, two letters, two words together. And so, you know, I put that story in and people email me and they tell me, you know, they love the fact that I've told them something about my life. So this makes the connection between you and the reader stronger. Okay, style. So with nonfiction books, they can be more formal than a fictional story. But what's important is that you do two things. The first of all is you read in your genre, check what the style and feel and tone of similar books in your genre is. Is it formal? Is it sassy? Is it sarcastic? And it's important that you check that because readers will have expectations. They go to a genre and read in that genre, multiple books in that genre because they love that genre. So there are some expectations. Of course, you can break those rules. I like to break the rules all the time. But it's important that you know what rules you're breaking and how that's going to impact your reader. And the second thing you need to do in terms of style and tone is assess what will match your business. So, for example, I am the rebel author. So my audience expects me to be cheeky and sarcastic and sweary and rebellious. So if I didn't write my books like that, there would be a disconnect. So it's really important that you marry those two things. What does your genre expect? And what is your business brand? What is your style in your business? For the length of the book, then you again need to check your genre. What are the top 100 books in your categories? What are the lengths of those? Typically, nonfiction is a little bit shorter than fictional books. They can range from 20,000 to 60,000. But again, it depends. You know, your book needs to be as long as your book needs to be to convey both the problem and the solutions to, you know, whatever it is that your topic is. I've written nonfiction books as short as 10,000 words, and The Anatomy of Prose is, I think, 67,000 words. So you can see that there is like a huge range, and like feel empowered to write the book to the length that it needs to be to cover your topic. If you don't know how to assess how long a book is, typically in a published page is about 250 words. So you can do the math. If you go and see how many pages are in a book, you'll be able to work out the length of the books in your genre. One last consideration before you publish. Do you want to be wide or do you want to be exclusive? All right, what does that actually mean? So in publishing, you can be exclusive to Amazon. Now, if you're exclusive to Amazon, this means that you enroll your books in something called Kindle Unlimited. This is where readers will pay, I think it's like $6.99 or $7.99 a month, and they can borrow any books that are enrolled in Kindle Unlimited. One of the benefits of that is you get a little bit more organic visibility than somebody who is not enrolled in Kindle Unlimited. And that's because, understandably, Amazon favors books that are in its thingy, whatever that word is, in its club, so to speak. When you are exclusive to Amazon, there are two types of income that you can earn. You can earn a normal sale if someone buys your ebook, or you can earn a page read if somebody has borrowed your book through Kindle Unlimited. And they are, so for every page they read, you will earn, you know, a percentage of a penny. I don't really like that because you don't pay an artist by brushstroke for their painting. You pay for the whole painting. So I always feel a bit funny about Kindle Unlimited. But again, there are benefits. You do get a bit more organic visibility. Some of the downsides are you cannot publish that ebook anywhere else. You cannot publish it on your website. You cannot, you know, if you wanted to do digital sales on your site, you can't publish on any of the other stores. The downsides of that are Amazon is only the biggest bookstore in America and England. It's not the biggest bookstore in Canada. It's not the biggest bookstore in China. So you're going to miss out on a whole wide range of readers. There's also less marketing flexibility, and there is a style of marketing that suits Kindle Unlimited more than other types of marketing, and that is rapid release. So you would, lots of authors who do well in Kindle Unlimited will write multiple books in a year and publish sort of every month or every 6 weeks. And that just helps to tickle the algorithms. So if you don't feel like that suits you, then you might want to consider publishing wide. I publish wide. Why do I do that? Because I have total control over everything. I'm never afraid that I'm going to publish somewhere that I should. You know, I can sell on my website. I can give my book away for free in exchange for email addresses. I can do anything that I want. I have more marketing flexibility. And of course, the important thing for me is that I can reach readers all over the world. I have readers in dozens and dozens of countries all over the world. If that sounds like something you want to do, then you probably want to publish wide. One of the downsides, though, is that you do have to juggle multiple platforms. If you're publishing to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, Apple, did I say Apple? Anyway, each one of these is a different platform. There are distributors called aggregators. And what these aggregators do is they hold a copy of your digital book and they will push out that book to lots of different stores for you. And you essentially pay them a percentage of each sale for the privilege of them doing that for you and making your life easier. One thing to note is that this is only for digital books. This is not for print books. You cannot be exclusive for print publishing. You could if you wanted to be exclusive on Amazon with your digital book and then publish wider with your print book. Alrighty, what is the cost of publishing? Well, you might not realize, but the actual act of publishing is free. So you don't have to pay anything to upload your books onto these sites, with one exception, which is Ingram Spark. And that is one of the print distributors, one of the bigger print distributors. And that I think is like $49, something like that. But everywhere else, all your digital books are all free. So what are then the costs that you would incur if you wanted to publish? Well, the biggest cost usually is editing, and there's multiple types of editing. The first one is, the biggest one is developmental editing that looks at your story structure, your, you know, your characters, or you, if it's a memoir, it will look at your tone and your style to make sure that you're conveying what you want to convey. It's very in-depth. You get line edits, you get big overarching comments as well. And if you've never written a book before, I do recommend that you have that type of editing. Copy and line editing, there are nuances and differences, but for the sake of this, they essentially look at the line level. Have you got repetition? Have you got crutches? Are you using the same words or same phrases? Or are you explaining things, you know, incoherently or whatever? So that's slightly less expensive. Proofreading then is the cheapest. That is purely looking at commas, errors, formatting, you know, if you've done titles in one font and then a different font, that kind of stuff. And that then, understandably, is the cheapest form of editing. Prices range for a developmental editing package. For an 80,000 word novel or book, it could be anything from, say, £800 to about £1,300. That's for like a normal editor. If you had a high-end editor, it could be up to £3,000. Proofreading then is right down the other end of the spectrum. And I think my 67,000 word The Anatomy of Prose cost me about $250. Yeah, something like that. So you can see it's a lot cheaper. Formatting then. I'll talk about formatting a little bit more in a second. Formatting is essentially the process of taking your Word document and getting it into the format that you need in order to publish your book. I do recommend, if you're a Mac user, that you buy Vellum, which is a formatting piece of software. It's super intuitive and you can format a book in, you know, under an hour. If you don't and you're not a Mac user, then I highly recommend you just outsource the problem. It will save you so much time. I did my first book and it took me 18 hours. I don't recommend you format yourself. Just outsource it and it will cost you anything from $100 to $300. So what about your cover then? This is the most important thing for your sales and your, like, your sales package. I know people like to think that readers don't judge a book by the cover, but they really do. So you do need a professional cover. Don't do it yourself unless you are a book cover designer, of course. You can get a very, very cheap cover that's pre-made. That means somebody's already created a design and you can change some of the elements, like your name and the book title. And that could be as low as $50 if you look on websites like Fiverr and you spend some time searching for the type of cover that you want. If you have like custom illustration, you've got somebody who's got a big design company, then you could be looking at up to £2,000. For my books, I spend about £280 to £400 on my nonfiction books, but that will include a digital ebook, which is just the front cover. It will include two different paperbacks because I publish my paperbacks in two places and they have different templates because I like to make things difficult. And it will include a hardcover. That's usually when it's up more closer to £400. Advertising then, I've left a question mark. How much is your budget? How much can you afford? If you can afford £5,000 in marketing, great. You've got £5,000. If you can only afford £500 or £50, okay, cool. Maybe you can spend time rather than money in advertising. So yes, there is no perfect advertising budget. It all depends on your own personal finances, your business finances, and how much time you have to spare. So how do you create an actual book? I think this is one of the biggest questions that I get asked. And people are always afraid to ask this because they don't know how you go from written book in a Word document to published book. So this is what you do. Once you have got your Word document or your Pages document or Scrivener, Scrivener is a very popular writing software. Once you have your finished and it's been edited, then you need to format it. To format it, I've already mentioned, you can either outsource the problem, highly recommend that one, or you can use Vellum, which is what I do. So that is the logo for Vellum, the little pretty flower that we have there. And I think that's about like 250 quid, something like that. But that's it. Once you've brought it, that's it. You've brought it for life. So if you're going to publish more than one book, then it makes sense to buy Vellum because you're like saving the money. By the time you publish your third book, you've already made the money back on it. The last thing you can do is there are various sites like Readsy and Draft2Digital that will give you like templated Word documents. You can drop your content in, then you upload it, and they will then generate the files that you need. So the three types of files you need to publish a book are PDF for your paperback books. That's the file that you upload in order to get a physical copy. For Amazon, it's a MOBI file. And that's, you know, the file that then gets dumped onto anybody's Kindle. And for Apple, Kobo and the likes of that, then it is something called an EPUB. And they're all basically variations of the same file. So once you have your formatted book, you then need to upload it to your distributor. So it depends where you're going to publish, but, you know, the big ones are Amazon, Apple, Kobo, Barnes & Noble, and then usually people then can, or Google also, Google Play, people then start to use aggregators for the rest, like Chilino and the bookstore. So I use Draft2Digital because they have a great distribution into libraries that they use, I think it's called Overdrive that they do that through. So I do recommend that you use an aggregator as well. And you can choose through the aggregator whether or not you want to just for them to do it or whether you want to do it yourself. You, once you're uploading this digital MOBI or EPUB file into your distribution platform, you will then have to put in a load of what's called metadata. So that's the title, the author name, your book description. It will ask you what genre you're publishing in. So that's called a category and various bits of data like that, the pricing. That's it. For your digital book, that is it. What happens is, I'm just going to use Amazon. They will then push it to their website. It will appear. You can then, you know, fanny around with the sales page, making sure things are all connected. And if somebody clicks buy, it's going to get dropped onto their digital e-reader. For a paperback, you need to get a proof copy. Doesn't matter how many times you've checked that baby, there's got to be a mistake in it. So you need a physical copy of your book in order to check it. So once you've loaded it into your distributor, you'll click order a proof copy. It will arrive. You'll check it. You'll inevitably make changes. You'll upload a new version and then you are ready to rock and roll. You can hit publish. When people order a print book, we've got something called print on demand, which has revolutionized the publishing world for indie authors. So print on demand, somebody, if I want to go and buy a copy of Janet's book, I'll go to Amazon, I'll click buy. Amazon will either use its own innate publishing printing service, or it will talk to Ingram Spark. It will email them saying, we need a copy. Sasha wants a book. They'll print just one copy and that will then get shipped directly to me. What this does is it means that we don't have to, you know, order, do massive print runs with big printers. We can just upload our files and readers will then get copies of our book. It's amazing. I love it. I'm geeking out over it, but it is wicked. All right. So I have mentioned that book covers are super important for your sales because people do judge books by their cover. The next thing that is super important is book descriptions. So a non-fiction book description is slightly different to a fictional one, but it's centered around that problem. So you'll remember that we talked about what the problem is in your book at the beginning. So you need to give yourself a tagline, a controversial statement, something to hook that reader into your book. This should be your highlight in Hollywood flashing lights tagline at the top. With my first book, I wrote a book about how to write better villains. And the controversial statement that I used is your hero is not the most important character. Why is that controversial? Well, we authors, we love our heroes. They're our favorites. That's why we're writing a book about them. And so to say that a hero is not the most important character is a little bit controversial. And it worked. It sold out thousands of books because people were like, wait, what? Why? Why is that the case? But other examples, you can use like your statement or your like question that you're trying to solve in the book. So for the anatomy of prose questions like, do you struggle to write powerful prose? Are your sentences lackluster? This indicates to the reader that I'm going to solve their problem. Other things you need to include in your descriptions are that you list all of the benefits that the reader will get. So just an example sentence, you don't have to word it like this, but you know, this book will help you do X, Y, and Z by giving you the tools that do A, B, C. So yeah, as long as you are listing like the big headline benefits, that is a draw to the reader that they are going to get what they want from your book. List the problems that you're solving for them, but not the solutions. Obviously, you don't want to give them the solution in your description because then they've got no reason to buy your book. Another couple of things to think about is, how is your reader going to change by reading your book? How will they be different? You know, what is this gift that you are giving to them by solving the problem? How are they going to grow and develop by the end of the book? And the last thing that I recommend you do is, if you are controversial or cheeky like me and you're sarcastic and I use swear words, then you may want to indicate the tone in your book. I have definitely received one-star reviews because I dropped an F-bomb in my books. But you know what? I'm fine. It just means that they are not my readers, and that is okay. I would rather find my readers and my tribe. But that is why I do include just like a disclaimer almost to say, you know, if you like dark humor, sarcasm, and, you know, cheeky rebels or whatever, then you're going to love this book. All right. So a couple of recommendations. If you want to learn how to write better descriptions, two books, Mastering Amazon Descriptions by Brian D. Meeks and Sizzling Synopsis by Brian Cohen. All right. So how do you then sell a book? Well, I mean, there are a million ways. The two biggest types of marketing that you should consider with selling a book is spike marketing versus long-term marketing. So lots of new authors will focus on their launches. This big launch day, it's their, you know, the launch, they're birthing this baby into the world. And that's great. We all need to do that. But one thing you need to consider is that Amazon in particular will punish spike marketing. So if your book soars up the ranks on Amazon and then, you know, your launch week is over, you're stopping the marketing, it's going to plummet that baby into the depths of like no man's land. And Amazon is going to punish you for that. So with your marketing budget, it's really important to think about, yes, the launch, what are you doing for the launch? But how are you going to keep that puppy selling? What are you going to do a month down the line? What are you going to do 2 months down the line? Because if you can get your book to stay at a certain rank in Amazon, that's going to tickle the algorithms. Amazon's going to like that. So yes, think about not just the launch, but what are you going to do long term to keep this book selling? Types of paid advertising. So if you don't have a large platform, if you don't have a YouTube channel with 200,000 subscribers, or you don't have a podcast that's listened to a million times or whatever, then you are going to have to do pay to play, because visibility, like natural organic visibility, is extremely hard to get now on the platforms. So types of paid advertising: Facebook ads, very good for people who are in Kindle Unlimited and bigger genres, because there's less granularity in how you can target those ads. So for example, romance, crime and thrillers do very well through Facebook advertising at the moment. For nonfiction, for your businesses, I would recommend you start with Amazon ads. I almost exclusively do Amazon ads for my nonfiction books, and they get a huge return on investment. So I would look at learning about Amazon ads. And actually, Brian D. Meeks, I think it is, has also done a book on Amazon ads. So I recommend looking at that. BookBub ads are great for that granularity. You can target individual authors. So if you have comparison authors who have published in your nonfiction genre, look to see if they are on there and if you can target them on BookBub. BookBub also has very large featured deals. They have, you know, a few million people on a mailing list all wanting deals. So if you want to do a discount deal, it's a great method for getting sales on that. And of course, if you know other influencers or people in your industry that have also published books, you may want to share the news in both of your mailing lists. And that's another way of advertising. Content marketing is my absolute favorite for nonfiction. I'm not going to go into stacks of detail because you're all fans of Janet already. So I'm sure you all know a ton about content marketing, or, you know, you're going to learn about it today. What I will say is content marketing is like a double win, because you get to help people and solve their problems, as well as raising awareness for your books. And you can also repurpose a lot of the content that's already in your nonfiction book for that content. So you could put out a chapter, for example, on your website, or an answer and a question from your chapter, or from a chapter, for example, and you've got a blog or an article you could submit to another website, or a podcast, for example. You could do a solo show on that. So yes, So one thing that authors often forget is they're very worried about, you know, like the paid advertising, the all the outward external stuff. But you are business owners, you are entrepreneurs. This means you probably already have a customer base that would be really interested in your product, your book, but that you're publishing. So why not capitalize on the audience that you've already got? You may have people who would want to read it in advance. Do post a review on launch day, help spread the word. So think about your own customer base and how you can capitalize and utilize them. Maybe you can give a few review copies out before you launch. Consider also your mailing list and how you are going to ensure that they know about your book launch. One thing that's really important, always send a last chance email. So if you have your book on pre-order, make sure that you know you've sent a good few emails and then a last chance email. I cannot tell you, for my last pre-order, my pre-orders went up by 25% 2 days before the launch because I sent a last chance email. Never forget the last chance email. It's amazing. If you've got a podcast or your own website or a blog, make sure you're pumping out information and helpful, useful content to your audience before your launch. And then if you have a physical shop window, that also, how could you put a display in that? Something to think about. On the outward side, then, think about guest appearances. Have you got influencers you could reach out to? Do you already have a network of people in your industry that would be interested in helping you launch a book? Podcasts, interviews, audio is huge at the moment. So pitch to be on podcasts to talk about a topic. One important thing when you're pitching, make sure you are pitching with how you can help that podcast or what are you going to give their audience by talking about your topic. All right, Janet loves to talk about awareness days as well. So could you launch a book about sleep on sleep day, for example? Could you, you know, do something in and around that awareness day? If you have more of a memoir or narrative nonfiction, have you got a local interest in your book? Is there a location mentioned? Maybe you could, and okay, the world has lost its mind a little bit with the corona, so not so much now. But if you were publishing towards the end of the next year and hopefully the world isn't so chaotic, maybe you can do live events or get local media interested because you have a local interest thing. Lost my words. All right, let's move on. This is a live online event. Could you do live online events? Could you get somebody else to host you? Could you get somebody to do a Q&A with you? Could you do a Q&A to your audience? So think about those types of ways of marketing. All of this is a different way to get a touch on your customers and on your readers to help them find out about your book. Last thing then, reader magnet. So one thing I find it super important is to build your mailing list. The only way you can do that in this day and age, because inboxes are so full, is to give something of value to your potential reader. With nonfiction books, it's super easy to do. If you have like a how-to book, then create a checklist or a guide and give that away in exchange for their mailing email. And also think about running a giveaway. I know it seems like counterintuitive to give away a copy of your book, but it's really not. It both raises awareness of your book and it also helps people get excited about your launch and the potential of winning. And 9 times out of 10, whoever enters your giveaway is probably going to go and pre-order your book. That's what I do when I enter giveaways because I know I'm not really going to win. But, you know, I like to enter just in case. All right. Thank you. Let me know if you have any questions. And if you want more, you can listen to me on my podcast, The Rebel Author, or tap me up on Facebook or Instagram.
So I hope you found that useful. And if you want to find out more about Sasha, then I've put all the links to her website and her socials in the show notes. If you're not sure where the show notes are, by the way, you'll find them if you're listening on your PC or Mac or PC, then directly below the media player, you'll see like a blog post, you'll see a list of all the different links mentioned in the episode there. If you're listening on a podcast app on your phone or on your tablet, if you go to this specific episode, again, you'll see a blog post underneath the player where you're listening and you'll see links to Sasha's socials and her website. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would love it if you came over to Instagram and tagged myself and Sasha into a post. Say hello to us on Instagram. I'm at Jan Murray UK and Sasha is at Sasha Black Author.
If you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Build Your Online Audience podcast with Janet Murray, do check out her Build Your Online Audience program over at buildyouronlineaudience.com. The Build Your Online Audience program is the essential resource for anyone looking to build an engaged online following. If you want to attract more leads online so you can stop wondering where your next sale is coming from, or if you want to launch a dream project like an online course, book, or podcast, the Build Your Online Audience program has everything you need to grow an engaged online following. Head over to buildyouronlineaudience.com to find out more.